Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the secret societies right after this. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. This surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. Those systems contained 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about you is being gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how government, banking, insurance, business, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for in the first place? Well, knowing how all of this information is being gathered, and what information is being stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private, actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free CD package. It's our general information CD package. That's the place to start. And you can order one of those by calling us direct, or if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, then go to the archives page, and you can download it right there. That's the general CD package. All right, last time we were talking about the secret societies, and we're up to the United Nations. Remember, we're getting this from Chapter 3 of Len Horowitz's book, which is called Healing Codes for the Biological Apocalypse by Len Horowitz, put out by Tetrahedron Publishing Group in Sandpoint, Idaho. It's a 1 in 100 read. You're gonna go a long time before you ever find another book that's like this. Well, one of the chapters in his book is actually taken from the Committee of 300 book by Dr. John Coleman, or a lot of it. Not all of it, but you know, a lot of it. And what this does is it gives us a bird's eye view of the insider network of the secret societies, and tells us, well, here's what they're up to. Here's what they're trying to accomplish. Here's what their agenda is. What's commonly known as the conspiracy. Do you believe in the conspiracy theory? And if you want to ask me, the answer is absolutely. Absolutely. Why do you believe that? Because I read books like this. And as a result of that, it gives me a bird's eye view and a better explanation and understanding of national health care insurance. See, the average Joe Sixpack out here, he thinks that the government's trying to do him a big favor. They're going to give him national health care insurance so he can go out here and have the government and take care of the insurance companies, take care of his health care needs. And he thinks the government's just working their hearts out for him and just trying to help him. And one thing or another, the bottom line is they're trying to kill you. That's the bottom line of them. And how is that going to end up? It's going to end up with you being dead. And it fits right in with Bible prophecy. That's in with Revelation 6, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 25. You know, it's called the Great Tribulation. Now, Jesus called it deception. He said that there's a great deception out there. He warned all of his followers. They're called the elect, E-L-E-C-T in the scripture. They're not called saints, they're called elect. Well, they're called saints in the Catholic versions, but they're called the elect here in the King James Version. And so these people here are being warned that there's going to be a great deception that would be so great that if it were possible, they would be deceived. And so the subject matter this week, called the New Age Version of the Bible, is aimed at that elect. It's aimed at this deception, this great conspiracy. So I thought I would report on that. And in order to report on next week's program, we have to have a little background. So this week we're taking a look at the secret societies, and next week we're going to take a look at the New Age versions of the Bible. The people who have the power to change the Bible are already at work, changing our constitution, changing our educational system, our monetary system. They have converted us from capitalists to communists. We're practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and call ourselves capitalists. We send our children to public school, the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. We pay an income tax, the 2nd plank. We deposit our money and write checks on the 5th plank, the central bank plank, plank number 5. I mean, we practice all 10 of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and call ourselves capitalists. And we learn this in our public schools. It's a deception. And we buy into it, and we have for the last 100 years or so. So the question arises, well, who's creating this deception? Who are these people that have all of this skill and ability and all this great power? Now, the United Nations, where we broke off last time in our discussion here, the United Nations has a place in this New World Order. It's not the institution or organization. It's just one of many institutions and organizations that are working to this New World Order. Now, a fellow by the name of Chaitkin, C-H-A-I-T-K-I-N, his expose came from the authors Loftus and Ahrens. They not only detailed the Rockefeller-Nazi connection, but their influence over the United Nations since its inception. And how this power was developed and exercised included the following. In July of 1940, Defense Secretary James Forrestal had offered Nelson Rockefeller the position of coordinator of Inter-American Affairs. It was an intelligence shop, which Nelson himself had proposed should be set up with himself naturally in charge. Now, all through the war, at least while Rockefeller was in charge, everything the Germans wanted in South America, they got from refueling stations to espionage bases. Behind Rockefeller's rhetoric of taking measures in Latin America for the national defense stood a naked grab for profits. Under the cloak of his official position, Rockefeller and his cronies, the dullest Forrestal clique, would take over Britain's most valuable Latin American properties. If the British resisted, he would effectively block raw materials and food supplies desperately needed for Britain's fight against Hitler. In each country, Rockefeller set up coordinating committees composed of reactionary executives from Standard Oil, General Electric, and United Fruit Company, which promptly bled South America dry. It was just this sort of thing that endeared Rockefeller to the State Department. In November of 1944, he was asked to serve as Assistant Secretary of State for Latin American Affairs. It was all a farce, of course. Most of South American dictators made a fortune from the Nazis during the war. These were the nations that were later to decide the fate of Israel in the United Nations. Now, Rockefeller's political and corporate strategy was to use his bloc of fascist nations to buy the majority vote at the United Nations to favor U.S.-sponsored resolutions. It was just simple arithmetic. It was democracy in action. The Latin American bloc represented 19 votes to Europe's 9 votes. Rockefeller made no apologies for his strong-arm tactics, insisting that unless the United States operated with a solid group in this hemisphere, he could not do what we wanted in the world. And in June of 1945, Rockefeller was invited to attend the first UN conference in San Francisco, where his job was to control the Latin American delegation. And he was particularly effective at this position. The only problem was that Rockefeller was too preoccupied with representing the interests of big business, not the United States. With FDR dead, he acted as if the UN was his personal organization, bought and paid for, which in fact it was. He could do whatever he wanted, and he did, at least until he pushed President Truman beyond his limit. Now, for Harry Truman's interest, Rockefeller's behavior over Argentina and the Latin bloc overall was the last straw. On August the 23rd, 1945, a stunned Nelson Rockefeller left the White House telling his friends that he fired me. For the next 2 years, Rockefeller went back to making money, something that he did extremely well. His partner in money-making just happened to be John Foster Dulles, a trustee of the Rockefeller Foundation and a fellow conspirator in smuggling Axis money to safety. Now let's take a look at the Rockefellers, the Nazis, eugenics, and the Freemasons. In 1909, Chaitkin recalled that John D. Rockefeller created the Rockefeller Foundation, and by 1929, John D. had invested more than $300 million worth of the family's controlling interest in the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey, now called Exxon, into the Rockefeller Foundation's account. According to Chaitkin, this money created the field of psychiatric genetics and funded the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Psychiatry and Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Eugenics, and Human Heredity. The Rockefellers' chief executive in charge of these institutions was the fascist Swiss psychiatrist Ernst Rudin, assisted by his protégés Otmar Vischer and Franz Kuhlmann. In 1932, Chaitkin recounted, the British-led eugenics movement designated the Rockefellers' Dr. Rudin as the president of the Worldwide Eugenics Federation. Now, a few months later, Hitler rose to power, and the Rockefeller-Rudin apparatus became a section of the Nazi state. Rudin then headed the Racial Hygiene Society. Rudin and his staff, as part of the task force of hereditary experts chaired by SS Chief Heinrich Himmler, drew up the sterilization law. In the United States, this law was described as the model law, and it was adopted on July 1933, as published in the September 1933 Eugenical News USA with Hitler's signature attached. Vescher and his assistants, Auschwitz, Medical Chief Joseph Mengele jointly authored reports for special courts to reinforce Rudin's racial purity law against cohabitation of Aryans and non-Aryans. They also produced films to help sell their racial cleansing ideas. Now, under the Nazis, Chaikin noted that the German chemical company IG Farben and the Rockefeller Standard Oil of New Jersey were effectively a single firm merged in hundreds of cartel arrangements. IG Farben was led up until 1937 by the Warburg family, Rockefeller's partner in banking, and in the design of the Nazi German eugenics. Now, I think we should point out here that it was Paul Warburg who came here to the United States in 1907 and helped push through the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. Second, we should all be alerted to the fact that Queen Elizabeth owns 65% of IG Farben. Furthermore, Queen Elizabeth's name is not Windsor. Her name is Saxe-Gotha. She is not English. She is German. And the Saxe-Gothas changed their name during World War I to Windsor so that it would look better to the British public. So there's some skullduggery and there is some intrigue involved here. And the Conspirators Hierarchy, called the Committee of 300, written by John Coleman, I'll explain it to you and give you the names, the dates, the times, the places, the facts, the witnesses, and the evidence to support my statements. Going on, during the war, IG Farben built a huge factory at Auschwitz to capitalize on Standard Oil and Farben patents to make gasoline from coal with the help of concentration camp slave labor. The SS was then assigned to select the guard and the inmates deemed fit for IG Farben's workforce. Those judged unfit were killed. Moreover, Chaikin reported additional Rockefeller-linked Nazi atrocities. In 1936, Rockefeller's Dr. Franz Kallmann interrupted his study of hereditary degeneracy and immigrated to America because he was half-Jewish. Kallmann went to New York and established the Medical Genetics Department of the New York State Psychiatric Institute. Now, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry published Kallmann's study of over 1,000 cases of schizophrenia, which tried to prove its hereditary basis. In the book, Kallmann thanked his longtime boss and mentor, Rudin, and Kallmann's book, published in 1938 in the U.S. and Nazi Germany, was used by the T4 unit as a rationalization to begin in 1939 the murder of mental patients and various defective people, perhaps most of them children. Gas and lethal injections were used to kill 250,000 under the program, in which the staffs for a broader murder program were desensitized and trained. Now, Chaikin further detailed links between Rockefeller interests and the horrific medical experiments conducted at Auschwitz. In 1943, Joseph Mengele's superior, the director of Rockefeller's Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Eugenics, and the Human Heredity in Berlin, his name Otmar Verscher, secured funds for genetic experiments from the German Research Council. In a progress report, Verscher wrote for the council and stated, quote, "My co-researcher in this research is my assistant and anthropologist and physician, Mengele. With the permission of the Reichsfuhrer SS Himmler, anthropological research is being undertaken on the various racial groups in the concentration camps, and blood samples will be sent to my laboratory for investigation." Mengele and Virchow were especially interested in studying twins during their special protein investigations that required daily blood drawings. Horrific experiments followed. Needles were stabbed into people's eyes for eye color experiments. Others were injected with foreign blood and infectious agents. Limbs and organs were commonly removed, and occasionally without any anesthetic. Women were sterilized, men were castrated, and sexes were surgically altered. Thousands were butchered, and their heads, eyeballs, limbs, and organs were delivered to Mengele, Virchow, and other Rockefeller-linked contingent organizations at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. Now, later in 1946, Virchow, according to Chaikin, requested assistance from the Bureau of Human Heredity in London to keep his scientific research progressing. A year later, the Bureau moved to Copenhagen, Denmark, and its new Danish facility was built, once again, with Rockefeller money. It was here that the first International Congress in Human Genetics convened. A decade later, Virchow became a member of the American Eugenics Society, an organizational clone of the Rockefeller Population Council. And according to Chaykin, Dr. Coleman directed the American Eugenics Society from 1954 to 1965. He helped rescue Virchow by testifying at his denazification hearings, and it was Coleman who created the American Society of Human Genetics, organizers of the Human Genome Project, as it's known today. Currently, a $3 billion effort to map the genetics of humanity, along with each race's specific disease susceptibilities. Let me underline that. This Human Genome Project, as it's called today, was funded and begun by the Rockefellers back in 1929. It's called eugenics. Now, it currently is being funded by $3 billion in an effort to map the genetics of humanity. You know, you see that on PBS quite often. With the specific interest in the disease susceptibilities of the various races. Now, keeping in mind now, the Club of Rome, one of the secret societies, is and has been espousing population control over the past 50 years, and they expect to have this project accomplished by about the year 2050, when they have reduced the Earth's population to approximately 500 million people, about a half a billion. All right, now this is where we're headed. Now, when we get into the book of Revelation and this New World Order and this great tribulation, and you start putting these pieces of the puzzle together, secular and scriptural, it tells you a story. And that's the story that we are uncovering, that we're decoding this week. Now, during the 1950s, the Rockefellers reorganized the U.S. eugenics movement in their own family offices with spin-off population control and abortion groups. And the Eugenics Society's address changed to the Society for the Study of Social Biology, its current name. So notice, the names sound pretty good, don't they? Wouldn't you like to belong to the Society for the Study of Social Biology? Sounds pretty trendy to me. Moreover, with support from the Rockefellers, the Eugenics Society of England set up a subcommittee called the International Planned Parenthood Federation, which for 12 years had no other address than the Eugenics Society. All right, so Planned Parenthood comes into the mix. Planned Parenthood is also behind schools promoting this thing of sex education. In conclusion, Chaykin observed, the Rockefeller Foundation had long financed the eugenics movement in England and the genetics industry in America, a disturbing legacy for the private international apparatus, which, along with substantial support from the Scottish Rite Freemasons, has set up the world for a global Holocaust under the United Nations flag. Now, that's what Len Horowitz wants to warn you about, and he wants to protect you from. Now, the creator of the universe does not want to protect you from this Holocaust. He's the one that's bringing it on. And it's being brought on because of your wickedness and your evil. That's right. It's called sin. People who are wicked and evil, remember, die in places like Sodom and Gomorrah and a worldwide flood and the Great Tribulation. It's payback time. Payback is what we're facing here. All right, going on in the Rockefeller blood banking and Freemasonry industry, it was apparently no random coincidence that the Rockefeller family gained so much control over international banking, including blood banking. Lawrence Rockefeller, one of the four Rockefeller brothers, as will be discussed later, assembled the New York City Blood Council that evolved to largely control the international blood banking industry. The importance of blood and bloodlines is a recurring theme in this book, as it is for the highest level Freemasons. According to the structure of Freemasonry, as seen in figures 3.3 and 3.4, the Order of the Red Cross stands third in the top echelon of power, just behind the Maltese Brotherhood and the Order of the Knights Templar. Okay, so let's write these down. The Order of the Knights Templar is knight number one, then the Order of the SMOM, the Maltese Cross, is number two, and the Red Cross is number three. Now, do you remember what a cross is? See, you Christians out there, you believe that the cross is the symbol of Jesus, who was hung on a cross. Jesus wasn't hung on a cross. He was hung on a steros. A steros is a stake, a tree. Remember, it's against the law to keep a man who has been hung on a tree overnight. You have to bury him before sundown. Then the second factor that comes in here is that a cross is a taos, T-A-O-S. We have a city here in New Mexico named Taos. That's a cross. It is the cross of Nimrod. It is the symbol of the sun worshipers. People who wear crosses are advertising to you that they are sun worshipers. And that's what Christianity is all about, sun worship. That's why you go out on Easter sunrise services, to worship the sun as it comes up. Now, you call it the Son, S-O-N of God. No, it's the S-U-N God that you go to church on Sunday to worship. Now, that's part of this deception that we began our discussion with, you know, four programs back now. And these secret societies are, in fact, religious. If you don't think that Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller are religious, you know, you're missing the boat here. It is true that they're not going to your local Christian church, you know, on Sunday. But these people are very, very religious people. And they worship Lucifer. They are occultists. And they worship their god Lucifer. And they're in great positions of power and authority. And they're using that power and authority for a goal, for an agenda. And that is the depopulation of the earth. Now, Lucifer has one more step that he hasn't even told his initiates. He wants them to help him eliminate 90% of the earth's population, and then he's going to go on and eliminate the whole earth's population. See, he hasn't told even his closest collaborators, guys like Henry Kissinger and George Bush, the ultimate plan. Let me show you what it is. It's over here in Matthew chapter 24. Now, the Messiah tells us what the rest of the story is, as old Bar Harvey used to say. In verse 22, he said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. None. Zero. Zilch. But, he said, for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. So there's a group of people here on planet Earth, alive today and drawn breath, who called the elect in the Scripture, could be deceived if it were possible, who have been warned about this deception. And it's going to end up in a scenario that is so deadly, so intense, so cruel, so wicked, so evil, that nobody would be left alive on the planet unless God himself intervenes at the last moment, which he always does because he's a great dramatist. God, the great dramatist, is going to intervene at the last possible moment. Why does he do that? I don't know. I plan to ask him that in the judgment. Hey, why did you always wait to the last minute? Why did you wait until Pharaoh was lapping at the heels of the Israelites struggling out of the Gulf of Aqaba before you collapsed the walls of water? Why didn't you kill him on the other side so that we didn't have all that grief? I'll ask him. I plan to. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. Let me give you a reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, the Rockefeller Blood Banking Program over here. Beginning with the Order of the Rose Crow, C-R-O-I-X, I guess that's Crow-E or Crow-X, Veritas, more commonly known as the Rose Croix, I guess that's Croix, C-R-O-I-X, or Rosicrucians, the Red or Rose Cross, was adopted as an identifying symbol of the Masonic tradition. According to Bagent et al., This practice began in 1188 when the Priori de Sion accepted the ceremonies of Ormus, said to have been an Egyptian sage, mystic, and Gnostic adept in Alexandria, a hotbed of mystical activity during the first century AD. Here, Ormus is believed to have exchanged theophanies with Judaic, Zoroastrian, Mithraic, Hermetic, Neoplatonic, and Pythagorean scholars. The name Ormus was synonymous with the principle of light in Zoroastrian and Gnostic history. Thus, Ormus was not only the originator of the Red Cross symbol, but he apparently helped propagate the term Illuminati. Over time, Illuminati has come to mean the few powerfully illuminated or enlightened souls who are said to draw their power from Lucifer. Illuminati, in fact, according to Webster's dictionary, is derived from the French word Lucifer, meaning light-bearing. Webster also cross-references Lucifer to the word light. So according to the Secret Society's author Jan van Helsing, Illuminati came into more common use during the 14th century in Germany, where it applied to the high initiates of the Brotherhood of the Snake, a savant brotherhood that had subscribed to the dissemination of spiritual knowledge and the attainment of spiritual freedom from extraterrestrials more than 3,000 years before Christ. Extraterrestrials, commonly known as demons. The Latin name of Illuminati and the biblical term for snake have related origins and definitions. The word snake derives from Nahash, which came from the root word NHSH, meaning to discover, to decipher. In Latin, illuminare means to illumine, or to recognize, or to know. Thus, the snake used by organized medicine today, as seen in figure 3.5, became a symbol of evolving illuminance or intelligence. Looking back at the Templar's signal or symbol in figure 3.1, the snake began and ended with a swastika. Additionally related is the fact that the Rockefellers established a monopoly over American medicine back in the 1920s. Now, citing Van Helsing's research, one of the main branches of the Illuminati in Germany were the mystical Rosicrucians, who were introduced at the beginning of the 9th century by Charlemagne. Several other authors relayed that the Illuminati and the Rosicrucians were the driving force behind the esoteric religious movements of the 17th and 18th centuries. Now, according to Webster's dictionary, Christian Rosenkreutz, that is the Rosicrucians, was the reputed 15th century founder of the movement, a devotee to esoteric wisdom with emphasis on psychic and spiritual enlightenment. We call it occult or witchcraft today. Their manifestos, fervently supported by the liberal factions of Protestants in Europe, inflamed the leaders of the Catholic Church and the Jesuits. Among the most eloquent and influential exponents of Rosicrucian thought was Robert Fludd, the Priori de Sion's 16th Grand Master. The Jesuit and church backlashes that resulted in the persecution of the Cathars and Templars also helped spark Martin Luther's rebellion. Martin Luther also had close links to both the Illuminati and the Rosicrucians, wrote Van Helsing. Luther's friends recognized the Rosicrucian seal that he wore that contained a rose and a cross with his initials. After Luther's death, his confessional community was supported by Francis Bacon. Francis Bacon was the highest-ranking Rosicrucian in England and is mentioned previously the general architect of the King James Version of the Bible. So now let's look at the Red Shield or Rothschilds. Mayor Rothschild once made this observation. He said, "Give me control over a nation's currency and I don't care who makes its laws." That was asserted by Mayor Amschel Rothschild a century later. Rothschild is German, which means red shield. Changing his name from Bauer to more easily relate to royalty, including Prince William IX of Hesse-Hanau, who favored the House of Rothschild for banking his massive wealth, Bauer chose Rothschild, likely respecting the Freemason symbology to come to know while attending the German Order's Masonic Temple with Prince William. At that time, Francois de Lorraine's Vienna court became, according to Holy Blood, Holy Grail authors, Europe's Masonic capital, and a center for a broad spectrum of other esoteric interests as well. Francois himself, in fact, was a practicing alchemist with an alchemical laboratory in the Imperial Palace of Hofburg, turning base metals into gold, as was de Lorraine's speculative practice, likely piqued the interest of Rothschild, who sent his son Solomon to Vienna, where he is known to have joined the Freemasons and opened up a banking branch. At the same time, Rothschild's four other sons established banking houses throughout Europe. Amschel went to Berlin, Kalman to Naples, Nathan, the eldest son, to London, Jacob to Paris, where Charles Nodier, the Grand Master of the Pierre de Sion, then served. By the early 1800s, the Rothschild banking dynasty largely controlled European currency markets, while Nathan maintained substantial control over English wealth through his Bank of England. Almost a half century had passed since the Rothschilds established and commanded, with the help of Adam Weishaupt, the secret order of the Bavarian Illuminati at Ingolstadt. Thereafter, the Rothschild family wielded major influence over other important secret lodges, including those in America. A list of the main known organizations of the Illuminati is shown in Figure 3.6. The Rothschilds played a commanding role in virtually all of them. Now let's look at Cecil Rhodes and his New World Order scholars. On February the 5th, 1891, several wealthy Englishmen, Lord Rothschild included, joined Cecil Rhodes to found the Committee of 300. The main objective of the group was to promulgate a worldwide British plutocracy. The committee structured itself after the Society of Jesus, the Jesuit order of the Catholic Church. Later, Hitler's SS would do the same thing. In Rhodes' own words, here's what the Committee of 300 intended, and here's why. He said, "There is a destiny now possible to us, the highest ever set before a nation to be accepted or refused. We are still undegenerate in race, a race mingled of the best northern blood. We are not yet dissolute in temper, but still have the firmness to govern and the grace to obey. We have been taught a religion of pure mercy, which we must either now betray or learn to defend by fulfilling. And we're rich in an inheritance of honor bequeathed to us through 1,000 years of noble history, which it should be our daily thirst to increase with splendid avarice, so that Englishmen, if it be a sin to covet honor, should be the most offending souls alive." He went on to say, "If we had retained America, there would be at the present moment many millions more of English living. I contend that we are the finest race in the world, and that the more of the world we inhabit, the better it is for the human race. Just fancy those parts that are at present inhabited by the most despicable specimens of human beings. With an alteration, there would be in them if they were brought under Anglo-Saxon influence. Look again at the extra employment a new country added to our dominion gives. I contend that every acre added to our territory means in the future birth to some more of the English race who otherwise would not be brought into existence." In Rhodes' first will and testimony, he gave his purpose more specifics. The extension of British rule throughout the world, the perfecting of a system of immigration from the United Kingdom and of colonization by British subjects of all lands, wherein the means of livelihood are attainable by energy, labor, and enterprise, and especially the occupation by British settlers of the entire continent of Africa, the Holy Land, the Valley of the Euphrates, the islands of Cyprus and Candia, and the whole of South America, the islands of the Pacific not heretofore possessed by Great Britain, and the whole of the Malay Archipelago, the seaboard of China and Japan, the ultimate recovery of the United States of America as an integral part of the British Empire, the consolidation of the whole empire, and the inauguration of a system of colonial representation in the Imperial Parliament, which may tend to wield together the disjointed members of the empire, and finally, the foundation of so great a power as to hereafter render wars impossible and to promote the best interests of humanity." Hey, you talk about a one world order now. Cecil Rhodes blueprinted it in 1891. This is the program that's being implemented today by the Bushes and Kissingers and the Illuminati. Now, much of what is known about Cecil Rhodes also came from eminent scholar and historian Professor Carol Quigley, President Clinton's teacher and mentor at Georgetown University during the mid-1960s. During Clinton's acceptance speech before the Democratic Presidential Nominating Convention on July 16, 1992, the life member of the Masonic Order of De Molay for Boys and the future President of the United States proclaimed, quote, he said, "As a teenager, I heard John Kennedy's summons to citizenship, and then as a student at Georgetown, I heard that call clarified by Professor Carol Quigley," unquote. More recently, Professor Quigley's publications were reviewed by Dr. Stanley Monteith, a medical physician who has extensively published on the threat to American life posed by Rhodes initiatives, which have culminated into what is currently termed the New World Order. Dr. Monteith pointed out that the Rhodes scholars, as most American presidents, including President Clinton, have been since Cecil Rhodes died back in the early 20th century, and left his vast diamond and gold mining fortune to his plutocratic cause, were part of the British imperialistic plot. In the Anglo-American establishment, Quigley's revelations provided a sense of continuity between the Freemasonry practice of forming secret societies, including the Skull and Bones, and then the grooming of American presidents and foreign policy specialists. The Rhodes scholarships, established by the terms of Cecil Rhodes' seventh will, are known to everyone. What is not so widely known, however, is that Rhodes, in five previous wills, left his fortune to form a secret society. And what does not seem to be known to anyone is that this secret society was created by Rhodes and his principal trustee, Lord Milner, and it continues to exist to this day. Now, in another work highlighting the evolution of President Clinton's role in Rhodes' scheme to undermine America and place the world again under British control in the New World Order, Rhodes' letter to his close friend, W.T. Stead, is revealing. In the autumn of 1890, Rhodes wrote this. He said, "Please remember the key of my idea discussed with you is a society copied from the Jesuits as an organization, an idea which ultimately leads to the cessation of all wars and one language throughout the world." Let's notice this one language. Isn't that precisely why God scattered us at the Tower of Babel? Because of that one world language and that one world government? Boys and girls, what we're witnessing today is simply an extension of what's been going on since approximately 2000 BC. The only thing feasible, Rhodes went on to say, to carry this idea out is a secret society, one gradually absorbing the wealth of the world, to be devoted to such an object. Fancy the charm to young America, to share in a scheme to take the government of the whole world. Dr. Jenis Cuddy, the source of the above citation, provided the additional perspective that Rhodes' universal peace was scheduled to begin. According to Rhodes, after 100 years, it is interesting, he noted, that in the autumn of 1990, President George Herbert Walker Bush, the senior Bush, began to publicly herald this New World Order, this concept for universal peace and cooperation. Regarding Rhodes' Jesuit reference, it should be recalled that Adam Weishaupt's design for the Rothschild-controlled Bavarian Illuminati followed a similar logic and structure. Gary Allen, in his book None Dare Call It Conspiracy, described Weishaupt's efforts in this regard thusly. He said, "It should be noted that the originator of this type of secret society was Adam Weishaupt, the monster who founded the Order of the Bavarian Illuminati on May 1, 1776, for the purpose of conspiracy to control the world. The role of Weishaupt's Illuminists in such horrors as the Reign of Terror is unquestioned, and the techniques of the Bavarian Illuminati have long been recognized as models for communist methodology. Weishaupt also used the structure of the Society of Jesus, known as the Jesuits, as his model, and rewrote the code in Masonic terms." Now, in his second book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, Professor Quigley revealed the following Rhodes' death, or that following Rhodes' death, Lord Milner formed an organization in England called the Round Table Group, likely after the legendary Knights of the Round Table, in an effort to actualize Rhodes' will. Some years later, Dr. Stanley Monteith recalled, the Round Table created a second front in the United States that came to be known as the Council of Foreign Relations. It's called the CFR. He documented this from Quigley's writing. In New York, it was known as the Council on Foreign Relations and was a front for J.P. Morgan in association with the very small American Roundtable Group. Hey, it's all one big happy family, isn't it? Now, this Dr. Stanley Monteith has a radio program called Radio Liberty. I think it's on just about daily out of Monterey, California. Why don't you look that up, Radio Liberty, and I think you'll find it. Notice here, presidents belong to this. George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr., Bill Clinton, they're all members of the group. You think that these people are political antagonists. Well, these people are buddies. One group heads the Democratic Party, the other group heads the Republican Party. So that what you actually have here is Team A and Team B. And Team A carries out the conspirators' motivations, like you see going on today with Barack Obama, with national socialized medicine and the bailout of the banks. Now you people are all ticked off. Boy, are you mad. So you're going to replace Team B with Team A, so you put the Republicans back in. Remember, those are the guys that you were so ticked off at. during the Bush years with the two wars that are going on in Afghanistan and Iraq and the spending of us into bankruptcy. Remember? And you got tired of Team A, so you put in Team B with Obama. And now you're mad at Obama, so now you're going to put Team A back in. And you keep rotating Team A, Team B, Team A, Team B. And these two teams are playing with you like cats play with mice. The ultimate end of it is that they're going to destroy you. The only friend you got is your creator. It's your God. That's the guy, remember, that we keep giving the finger to, the guy that we don't listen to, the guy that wrote the scripture, and now we're in the process of rewriting it for him. Evidently, God didn't get the Bible correct, and so we're out here rewriting it. Now, keep in mind that he warned us about that. He said, remember when we started our conversation, here in Revelation 22, about verse 18, he said, don't add to this, don't take away from it, because if you do, now I'm going to add to the plagues, or I'm going to take your name out of the book of life. So tuck it away in your mind. This book, by the way, that I'm reading from, this is chapter 3. It's called King James, the Bible and the Secret Societies. That's chapter 3 of the book called Healing Codes for the Biological Apocalypse by Len Horowitz. Len Horowitz. Published by Tetrahedron Publishing Group, Sandpoint, Idaho. Remember to go, when you're looking for these books, go to bravenewbookstore.com. The Committee of 300. You can probably get this from the Brave New Bookstore also. The Committee of 300, written by Dr. John Coleman. Go again to bravenewbookstore.com. The third book we're going to take up and look at more extensively next week, G.A. Ripplinger, The New Age Bible Versions. These are the guys that are after you. New Age Bible Versions comes from an outfit called AV Publications. Their phone number, 1-800-435-4535. Again, 1-800-435-4535. You can probably get a copy at any Bible bookstore or from bravenewbookstore.com. Hey, I'm about out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here, boys and girls, that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.